Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is real and change is coming to America.
All right, a corrupt assemblyman from Chicago, put in power by all sorts of nefarious money, is possibly going to become the next president of the United States. All he needs is a little more help from John McCain, and he's over the top. McCain is now backtracking, mumbling, apologizing, and sounding like the big schmuck that he is. And this is really worrisome. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Why in the world should John McCain, the man who would like to lead the United States of America in the battle against Islamofascism and all the other battles we have, why should he apologize to some little reporter from CNN who says to McCain, do you think it's appropriate for this radio host to use the name Hussein? He didn't even say it. He said the middle name of Barack Obama. And McCain says, oh, no, it wasn't. It was very inappropriate. I apologize. He's over. He's over. The guy is finished. He's committing Harry Caray. I'm telling you, he's had his first Bob Dole moment. And I told you yesterday they're going to finish him off in a white undershirt on a treadmill with spindly white arms and spindly white legs doing exercise for the world to see that he's a frail old man. And that's the end of McCain. You watch. Mark my words, I haven't been wrong yet. His Brutuses are around him, and they've circled around him, and they've told him how to act like a good liberal and how to lose friends and lose influence over people. There's a huge story that you haven't read about Obama. There's a huge story that CNN won't tell you, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox. Well, Fox is showing it, to their credit. It's on michaelsavage.com. It says, Manchin mistake piles the pressure on Barack Obama. Now, you haven't heard about the Manchin mistake, have you? You haven't heard about the Manchin mistake. You haven't heard about the British-Iraqi billionaire who lent millions of dollars to Obama's fundraiser just weeks before a land deal that is now haunting the presidential contender. You haven't heard about the funds from Mr. Aucci, one of Britain's wealthiest men, and how he helped Obama buy his mock Georgian mansion in Chicago. You haven't heard that a company related to Mr. Aucci, who has a conviction for corruption in France, registered a loan to Obama's bagman Antoine Tony Rezko from Syria on May 23rd, 05. You don't want to know about that. You moronic liberals don't want to know about the Middle Eastern connection to Obama. But you're going to wake up one day like the industrialists who backed Hitler. Now, I'm not comparing Obama to Hitler. I'm making another comparison. Obama's not Hitler. Obama is a socialist, a corrupt socialist like all the rest of them. Make no mistake about it. He's just a corrupt socialist. Make no mistake about it, okay? With a little bit of anti-white, anti-Americanism thrown in there underneath the surface by what I can tell so far. From my perspective, that's what I suspect. I mean, his preacher, the pastor of the church he goes to, hates Israel and Jews. Louis Farrakhan endorsed Obama yesterday. What does that tell you? He called him, he's the hope of the world. If Louis Farrakhan says a candidate is the hope of the world, and the Republicans don't say a word, but the day McCain has some talk show host use the name Barack Hussein Obama, and that little man from CNN, one of the little blonde men from CNN, one of the quisling blonde men who hates white men, asks him, do you think it was appropriate for that talk show host to use Barack Obama's middle name? And McCain, instead of laughing him off, saying, what middle name is that, John? See, that's what Reagan would have done. But you know McCain is a dummy. You know that McCain is basically a numbskull? He's starting to look like a moron. He's a dummy. If he had any aplomb, he would have said to the guy, what middle name is that? Excuse me? I didn't hear it. What was the middle name? With a smile, a Reagan-esque smile. Instead, he starts apologizing. It's unbelievable to me. And incidentally, we hear from Louis Farrakhan that finally America's going to let an African-American through, and we have a woman, an African-American. I guess Louis Farrakhan has not read a U.S. history in addition to his Middle Eastern readings. But he doesn't know that a woman and an African-American ran together for the presidency in 1872. Let me repeat that. Not 1972, Louis. But in 1872, a woman and an African-American ran together for the presidency in 1872. Victoria Woodhull and the black leader Frederick Douglass were running mates for the Equal Rights Party. That's when equal rights meant women and blacks, not homosexuals. Today, the homosexuals have usurped the word equal rights to mean man with man and girl with girl. But that's a separate story. So there it is. Those are some of the topics. It's open mic to mic, 1-800-449-8255. We're going to make it an open mic to mic day. I've gotten deluge with requests to replay one of my segments yesterday from yesterday's show about the Oscars and how I called for a fairness doctrine for Hollywood. And we'll do that on the Savage Nation today. Let us go to the callers on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Pat, Portland, Oregon. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. Hello.
Please don't ask me to answer you. It wears me out. Make your point, please.
Okay. It's about Barack and his brother, Roy Obama. In last year, according to this article in a local paper here in Vancouver, I'm in Battleground, they told about Barack Obama visiting his brother, who is a leader of a radical Muslim group in Kenya, who was responsible for the death of 700 Christian...
Well, wait. Obama has a brother in Africa? Is it full brother, half brother, distant brother? Who is he?
Obama.
What is it, like a Jimmy Carter's brother, Billy Beer? Or what is this?
Well, didn't say anymore. It's
Billy Beer now. We have a new Billy Beer story. I don't pay attention to what he did in Kenya. I'm more concerned about what Obama did in America than I am with what his brother allegedly did in Africa. Let me hear about Obama in America. Who is the man? Look, he has a history somewhere in this country. He wasn't created yesterday in a Petri dish. He was a small-time assemblyman. Powerful money went into his pockets. And they took this unknown man and they turned him into a senator. Then they took this unknown man after he's done nothing in the Senate. They want to make him president. Now, look, the 1919 World Series were fixed. Why can't you assume somebody's trying to buy the presidency? The question is, where does the money come from in the Obama campaign? That's the only question that we, the people, should be asking. Where does the money come from is the question. Well, I got an email this morning from my attorney, Dan Horowitz, which tells me a little bit about where some of the money came from for Obama, which I'll disclose to you shortly on the Savage Nation. It's from a law firm somewhere in America, which I will name shortly. And the law firm received $400,000 at one point from a defense fund that will not disclose its donors. It's another Muslim defense fund that will not disclose its donors. Now, we know that the radical Muslim countries are buying our defense contractors one by one and piece by piece. They were blocked just last week from buying the 3Com company, which creates firewalls for computers used by our Defense Department. God knows how that happened in the day and age when you can buy virtually anything and with a compliant, degenerate media. I don't know how the country still stands. We do know that big Arab money that wants to overthrow the West has decided they cannot overthrow us militarily because we're too powerful, but they can overthrow us from within simply by buying one politician at a time, simply by buying one company that's critical to our defense at a time, simply by supplying our enemies with information and with money. and by funding anti-American groups here in the United States of America. The FBI is supposed to protect us from this. Let's assume they are. Homeland Security, God only knows what they're doing. I don't see anything coming from them. I mean, they told us they stopped something. I don't know whether to believe. Do you know whether to believe them or not? Do you know whether to believe Homeland Security or not? Every once in a while, they give a speech about what they did. Do you really believe them? Do you believe any of this? Why are they not focusing on the radical Muslim takeover of the world? Why? We hear about it from McCain every once in a while. Then he backtracks and apologizes. Now, what does Obama have to do with radical Muslims? Probably, we don't know. We should say probably nothing, that a man is innocent until proven guilty. Why is it wrong to mention or utter the name Hussein when it is his name? Why should they not say Barack Hussein Obama? Why? Because it might trigger some questions in the minds of people in America who say, what do you mean Hussein? How did he get the name Hussein? His father was a Muslim. Now, that doesn't mean he's a bad guy, necessarily, period. Does it? But you mean we in America today have no right to say to a man who would be president, who has a Muslim father and a Muslim grandfather, where do you stand on the Muslim arc? Are you a moderate? Are you an extremist? Do you believe that they have a right to take over this, that, and the other thing? I mean, where do you stand on the issue of Islam? No one's asked them that. That's like the pregnant question out there. They asked Mr. Romney about his Mormonism until the cow came. They didn't stop. They did not stop. The liberal vermin in the media, the rats in the media, the Christian-hating rats in the media, the red diaper dopa baby Christian-hating rats in the media, the Communist Front Group, the Internacional on CNN, ABC, CBS, and NBC hammered Romney about his Mormonism until they drove him off the stage. But they're suddenly very sensitive to Hussein Obama's Muslim background. Why is that? Well, you'll have to go back to a book called The Savage Nation, published in 2002 by myself, where I said Islam is the only religion given a pass by the red diaper dopa baby vermin in the media to understand the danger we are in, that the radical left is committing suicide for America, and you, the moron, are giving them the power to do it. If you want to talk about Obama's past, his Muslim connections, does it worry you? The mansion story, where the money came from. If you'd like to talk about anything, michaelsavage.com. If you haven't seen the mansion story, it's linked up on michaelsavage.com from Times Online about the British Iraqi billionaire who lent millions of dollars to Barack Hussein Obama's fundraiser just weeks before a land deal. What about the funds from Nadmi Auchi, a Syrian, one of Britain's wealthiest men, helping Obama buy his mock Georgian mansion in Chicago? If that were McCain, do you think you would have heard about it? What if a British Iraqi billionaire lent money to John McCain? Do you think the red diaper dopa baby vermin in the media would be asking that question? I think so. Where is Obama's money from? When I come back, I'll give you one link that you're not going to believe right here. Be here. I'll be back.
Where do you draw the line? He called Senator Obama, he said it was a Chicago Daily political hack. He twice used his middle name. Is Barack Obama's middle name appropriate in this campaign?
No, it is not. Any comment that is disparaging of either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama.
Get him off the stage. What an embarrassment. The man who would lead America in the free world doesn't stand up to a little man from CNN and say with a smile, what is Obama's middle name? I don't know what it is, John. What is that? That's the end of it. He doesn't have the skills of debate. If he won't stand up to a little man from CNN, how is he going to stand up to the Hitler of Iran? How is he going to stand up to the Stalin of North Korea? How is he going to stand up to these world leaders who are very cagey and very tough and ruthless? How is he going to do it? I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. There he's had his first major dull moment. His first major Bob Dole moment. And it's not the last. There's McCain apologizing. Now, regarding Obama's donors, from my attorney, Dan Horowitz. Michael, I see on your website that you're funding links of Obama to donors. I have noted that his 10th largest contributor is Jones Day, a very large law firm. The firm received about $400,000, the New York Sun reports, from the Muslim Legal Defense Fund for America, a group with no known donors, yet claims to be a civil rights group. They then used that money to defend Ghassan Elashi, convicted previously of terror-related activities and one of the founders of CARE's Texas chapter. His brother, also a convicted terror suspect, ran the CAIR web server for many years. The defense is in the Holy Land Foundation case, where CAIR is an unindicted co-conspirator. Elashi is a named defendant. And then you look at Jones Data, the 10th largest contributor to Barack Hussein Obama. Again, to track it back, money came to him from Jones Day, a large law firm. That firm received $400,000, according to the New York Sun, from the Muslim Legal Defense Group of America, Fund of America, a group with no known donors that claims to be a civil rights group. I'm on the front lines of this battle against invisible Muslim groups in the United States of America. On March 7th, my attorney goes to court. The enemy is trying to have the case dismissed based upon fallacious statements. They're making up one fallacious statement after another, trying to have the case dismissed. We're very confident that the case will go forward so that a jury can decide who's who and what's what and who's damaging whom here. We also know for a fact that the United States government is very aware of the danger this country is in from Muslim charities in this country. Make no mistake about it. They know the danger we're in from Muslim charities in the United States of America. Again, I'm going to ask for your support right now. If you notice, I haven't done it for a while. If you noticed, I have not done it for a while. I'm also having problems with my website. We had a so-called error from our server today, and they knocked us off the World Wide Web for a while. You have to put in michaelsavage.com all over again. If you're used to getting on my site, you're probably having trouble. Well, thank you to the server. You have to put in michaelsavage.com, which I'm doing now to see if my site's working. And then when you go on to michaelsavage.com, there it is, you'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Or you can go to PayPal right on the website and click a donation. Either way, we need your help now more than ever. I'm on the front lines. Are you?
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. So you're not concerned about money to Obama. You're not concerned about his connections to various and sundry groups. You're not concerned about his middle name. You're not concerned about his Muslim past. You don't want to know anything about whether he's a moderate Muslim or what he believes. You're not concerned about where he stands in the war on terror. Nothing matters to you. All that you care about is that he can part the Red Sea. That's all that you care about. And I'm embarrassed by McCain apologizing. I really am. But I'll tell you, I didn't expect much more from him. For years he struck me as kind of an old bag man. I'm serious. You know, if I'm given a choice today between McCain and either of them, I vote McCain. I'm going to get 65% of what I want, maybe. With the others, I'm going to get a minus 65%. So it's clear to me what's going on here, what's at stake. I would never question McCain's patriotism, I'll tell you that. I'm pretty sure I can count on that. With the other two, I'm absolutely not sure. I have no reason to trust Obama on patriotism. What reason do I have to trust him when his wife says, I'm finally proud of America? A spoiled woman who went to Princeton, she's finally proud of America? Unbelievable that you could see the hostility seething out of her. God help us all. So on that level alone, I would trust McCain. I don't have any reason to trust Obama. Hillary? What reason do I have to trust Hillary? I know what her and her husband did to the military during their 8-year reign of terror. They gutted the military. I know people who work in the Defense Department who are Democrats, lifetime Democrats, who were telling me that they were cutting back on parts and weapons and the new development of weapons, forcing people out of the military. A lot of top people retired. A lot of middle management left. They would not stay in the military because the Clinton family was insulting to the military. They conducted, in other words, a coup, a purge, really, a purge in the military. That's what went on during the Clinton years. parts, spare parts were not created and procured. People were encouraged to leave the military who might have had an independent streak and stood up to them. And so consequently, a lot of bad things happened to the military under Hillary. So I don't trust her in the military. You know, to me, it all comes down to the military. Truthfully, to me, it's about national defense. If you ask me, the number one issue to me, it would be national defense and taxes. The rest, it's all hogwash as far as I'm concerned. The rest will take care of itself. You know, some will give you a little bit, some will take. But it's taxes, low taxes, or low taxes, huh? Taxes and defense, nothing else, you know? Mike in Huntington. Go ahead, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, I hate to say this, but we're better off with socialist Hussein Obama than Dr. Strangelove John McCain. I mean, this guy.
Why do you say? What makes you say that? What do you know about Obama that I don't know?
Well, the guy's half WASP. I mean, he's a descendant of Jefferson.
Wait. Let's not go into statements that have no meaning. What do you mean we're better off with Hussein Obama? Why? What has he done that would tell you we're better off with him?
Because of John McCain. This guy wants multiple.
Wait, sir. I know you're a Rush listener and a McCain hater. I understand that. You're a Rush bot, so you can't think for yourself. Tell me what it is about Obama that gives you faith.
It's not Obama. It's McCain that scares me. Because McCain wants to create a civil war in the Ukraine between the Catholic minority and the Orthodox majority by bringing it.
Wait. Please don't tell me about the Ukraine. Tell me why you have faith that Obama's better than McCain.
I don't have faith, but I know McCain is dangerous. He's going to get us into a war. This man is
That's
dangerous.
Because you're listening to the golfer. You're listening to the golfer. Isn't that where you get most of your opinion from, the golfer?
I don't like Rush. I like you. You're my number one, my favorite.
But if you like me, how could you say you like Obama more than McCain if you like me?
Because McCain has a hatred for Slavic people. He's a racist WASP. He was for Kosovo. He lied about Kosovo. He said the exact opposite that you do.
Let's talk about Kosovo. Let me tell you something that's going to break your heart. You find me one national politician who's not on the side of the Muslim Albanians, okay, and I'll eat my hat. Show me one national politician who's not in the same league. Tell me.
Not one. Just you're the
not
only
one. Not one of them is on the side of the Serbs. Not one. They're all sheeple. They're all members of the Council on Foreign Relations. The deal has been done. Kosovo has been stolen from Serbia to run a gas pipeline through Kosovo from the sea nearby. That's what it's all about. I wrote about this in 1998. The oily tracks run through it. Now, speaking about pipelines, it's funny how prescient and how knowledgeable I really can be. If you're a follower of this show, didn't I tell my audience last week that, to the best of my knowledge, the stealing of Kosovo by the world powers was all about an oil pipeline? Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Now, what is it that we read today that Russia announced they were going to do? Russia today announced a $1.5 billion deal to run an oil pipeline through Serbia. Did you read that?
No, I didn't read it.
So Mike was right again. The only person in the media who knows what this is all about. It's always about the money. It's never about right. It's never about wrong. It's always about money. It's always about business deals and money. And the Serbs are defenseless. They're the poor boy of Europe. They've been kicked around. They're the, I hate to use the phrase, but I think you know the phrase. They're the black man of the South in the 1950s in terms of the world today. Do you know that?
That's exactly true.
That's exactly who they're treating the Serbs like today. They're treating them like slaves that they can kick around. And the only friend they really have is Russia right now. Thanks for the call. But I'm going to go back to show you how much I really know. Now, it was all on surmisal. No one whispered to me. I'm still a man alone who walks around and tries to figure things out all on my own, which is why I can still figure things out, because I'm all on my own. I have no kitchen cabinet. I don't listen to advisors. I don't listen to advisors. I'm my only advisor. It's me and Teddy. Teddy, my dog. Teddy's my only advisor. In other words, I sit and I analyze and I think, then I forget about it, then I walk around or run around or bicycle around, and sometimes a thought occurs to me, wait a minute, hold it here. If it's all about an oil pipeline running through Kosovo, which will explain why both Democrats and Republicans are in favor of stealing a portion of a sovereign nation from them, and again, I have to reiterate something you can't read in the news because the people in the news business either don't know or don't want you to know. Kosovo has been part of Serbia since the 1300s. part of Serbia since the 1300s. Part of Serbia since the 1300s. Did you hear what I said to you? So, therefore, if both Democrat and Republican politicians are in favor of stealing Kosovo from Serbia, there must be a money trail. And what is that money trail? Well, in this case, in 1998, when Clinton illegally bombed Serbia and killed 2,000 innocent men, women, and children, and blew up every bridge on the Danube River, to this day you can't get a picture of the damage that Hillary did to the bridges over the Danube River. It's a secret. The pictures were never released by the world media. I wrote The Oily Tracks Run Through Kosovo, and it was about oil in the Caspian Sea that had just been developed, and they needed a pipeline into Europe. The cheapest pipeline would run right through Kosovo. So I figured out the oily tracks run through Kosovo. Now, I mentioned that last week. Bingo, like I didn't say a word. Today I wake up. Russia is doing a $1.5 billion deal with Serbia, building an oil pipeline through Serbia. Does that make me wrong or does that make me right? Trust me, I know what I'm talking about on most of these issues, and I'm ahead of most people in the media. It doesn't mean they're wrong. They know their own things and they're good at what they do, but they don't study things the way I do. They don't have a scholarly background the way I do. They don't have a PhD in science the way I do. They haven't written 25 published books the way I have. You get what I'm talking about? And I'm going to stand on my credentials, and I'm going to stand on my background, and I'm not going to apologize to anyone for my achievements, nor am I going to hide them anymore. So today, McCain had his Bob Dole moment. Apologized to a little man from CNN for not – he didn't even say the word Hussein. He was like Jackie Gleason in The Poor Soul. Little man John King there, the white hater, or the white man white hater, in favor of everybody but his own people. Everyone's good but America. All races are good except his own. What a schmuck. What's wrong with these people? How did they get made this way? Who creates these men? So he says to McCain, ooh, do you think it was right to use his middle name? So McCain, oh, no. That is inappropriate. That's a lesbian gay word, by the way. The word inappropriate is a lesbian gay word. That's like touching, inappropriate touching. So I tell you the truth. I try to have respect for McCain. And today, whatever little scintilla that I developed with a lot of trying just evaporated. It just evaporated. McCain apologized to this little man from CNN. Instead of saying with a smile, well, what is that middle name, John? I didn't hear it. What is it? He would have forced him to answer him. But no, he doesn't have the skills. McCain does not have the rhetorical skills required to be the president of the United States. Do you understand that? He's based, I don't know how to put it, like a postman. He's like a postman. Give him a sack and tell him to march around and collect disability. He'll be happy. That's all. What's he fooling himself for? So I have nothing else to say. What else do you want to talk about? There's nothing in the news. Everyone's waiting for the big debate tonight in Ohio. Oh, big debate in Cincinnati. Oh, the big debate. Oh, the big debate. There's going to be no debate. There hasn't been a debate. There is no debate. There's no debating. Hillary's finished. She's finished because she's painted herself in a corner with her own political correctness. She's finished. And there's a certain justice in it. I got to tell you the truth. I told you that. They created Obama, either directly or indirectly, and now the Frankenstein it has walked out of the laboratory. The Frankenstein has walked out of the laboratory, and they don't know what to do, how to get him back in the laboratory. They can't get him back inside the bell jar and strap him to a table. Frankenstein is loose, and she doesn't know how to deal with him. The only way to deal with him is call him Frankenstein. She won't do it because the fanatic base of the Democrat Party, the MoveOn.org, or the MoveOn.orgiastic degenerates who are driving the Democrat Party crazy, actually like Obama's 60s hippie philosophy. And so if Hillary were to attack Obama right where he needs to be attacked on his 60s hippie philosophy, point by point, and distinguish herself from him in the culture wars, in taxation, in military, if she could do that, that's if there's a difference. I'm not so sure there is. At the end of the day, Obama may be her in a pair of pants. We don't know, which is why she's flummoxed. The only chance she has is to show she's a centrist, and he's an extremist. But she can't do it because it's the extremist wing of the Democrat Party that's in control right now. You understand what I'm saying to you? That's why she's finished. And on the other side, we got the postman, McCain. The postman only rings once. He rang and I hung up on him. I'll be back.
Savage.
(1-800-449-8255) Phone number, michaelsavage.com. Website, stories are Obama's funds. Obama's funds. Obama's funds. The Manchin mistake. The Manchin mistake. The senselessness of the media questioning everyone except Obama. Why do they have so much faith in this man? Isn't it a form of racism to have faith in a man who's not white simply because he's not white? Did you hear what I just said? Why would they have faith in a man? What, because he's not a white man? Is that it? Is that why they have faith in him? Is that it? He's necessarily more honest than a man who is a white man? What is this? If you want to talk about what racism is, this is naked racism. To have such faith in a man and take him on his word while scrutinizing everyone else as though they're evil before proven innocent. Why is he so innocent? Wouldn't you think that an assemblyman from Chicago out of the Daily Machine is corrupt? Wouldn't you think so? And that phrase that the talk show host used that McCain apologized for is correct, that he is basically a portion of the Daily Machine, a cog in the wheel of the Daily political machine. That would be the least of my problems. I'd first have faith in him if he in fact was a cog in the Daily Machine. I'd feel a lot better. At least I know what I have. But I'm not so sure he's not a cog in some other machine. You see, KNEW, San Francisco. Dennis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I do believe that the Democrats are going to implode no matter which one gets the nomination. They are so rabidly insane supporters of Hillary and Obama.
Well, what do you mean by implode? What does that mean? How can they implode?
That's what
I'm saying. This is over and Obama's the nominee. How will they implode?
That's what I'm saying. No matter which one gets the nomination, the other side will not support them. Because
Oh, yes, they will. They've already... Half of the Hillary supporters have already jumped ship and support. Look at Chris Dodd. Look at Chris Dodd, that questionable creature from Connecticut. Look what he just did.
Yeah.
Jumped over to Obama. Ted Kennedy jumped over to Obama, a lifetime ally of the Clintons. How do you explain him singing for Obama, singing his praises in Spanish? How do you explain that? That doesn't look like imploding to me. It looks like they've jumped to the Clinton ship already. The pirates have left the ship. No, I don't see them imploding. I see the Republicans imploding with John McCain already apologizing for something he didn't do. That's all. Vinny in Tampa, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, I'm calling in regards to the upcoming election. I'm a registered independent, very conservative all my life.
All right, please. And, so what's your point?
Well, my point is this. I'm going to vote for Obama because just because the Republicans were so stupid to nominate McCain instead of Mitt Romney.
Well, that sounds stupid of you. I mean, that sounds like an idiotic move. You're committing homicide by vote. You're committing voter homicide. That makes sense. You're cutting your nose to spite your face?
Well, because the Republicans got a
Vinny,
cheap...
Vinny, you've been listening to the golfer too long.
Listen to Mike.
You're listening to the golfer too long. What sense does it make to elect a man who you know nothing about, who espouses 60s hippie philosophy, over a man who admittedly is flawed and a liberal to a certain extent, but at least on certain issues you know he's about 65% conservative? What sense would that make?
To me, McCain looks weak. He looks like a grocery store manager. I think the borders will get worse if you...
Well, wait a minute. Raul Castro and Fidel Castro in their heyday looked very strong. Would you like to have them as a leader?
No, I wouldn't, but I'm saying...
So what are you voting for? You like because the guy's younger? That's all?
No, the reason is because McCain, I think the borders will get weak. We have a problem down here in Tampa.
Wait. The borders will get weak. And you mean Obama's going to make the borders strong?
No, I'm not saying that he's going to make the borders stronger. But I think that
Obama said he would grant amnesty to all the illegals immediately and would do nothing about the border. Didn't you hear them in the last so-called debate? He doesn't even want borders with Mexico.
Well, I think at least he's still...
I'm not going to waste any more time. You don't know what you're talking about. That's all. That's voter homicide. Using a vote to commit suicide. It's like a homicide bomber using your vote to commit homicide on yourself. Makes no sense. James W. O.R., welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, long-term listener of you and a conservative. However, I am biting my tongue and I am voting for Obama.
You know, I know you're not a conservative. This is the standard operating. They're spending millions of dollars getting guys like you to do cold calls to radio shows. Right. Now tell me you're a former paratrooper in Special Forces and you fought bravely with a knife in your mouth.
No, but I do study jihad all the time regularly.
Oh, you study jihad. And Obama, you sure, is your best friend?
Yes, and I'll tell you why.
Well, tell us. We're waiting already. Say it.
Obama's going to get us out of Iraq. When he gets us out of Iraq, the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia and the Shiites in Iran are either going to A, settle their own problems, or B, fight it out. This way, the United States, which they both consider to be an infidel power, will not continue to spend all of its money and resources bankrupting itself, fighting a war in Iraq, which they can never win. And our biggest enemy...
Well, wait a minute. I thought the surge was working. The surge seems to be working, except in your mind and in the mind of Hillary and Nancy Pelosi.
The surge is only working because we have paid off the Sunnis in the Anbar province, and we are...
Well, good. That's how colonialism has worked for centuries. You pay off tribal leaders to be on your side. Instead of killing your men, they work with them. That's how we should have done it from the beginning. Instead of killing them, we should have bought them off. They're a bunch of thieves anyway. It's Alibaba and the 40 thieves over there. See if you can find one honorable man in Iraq. See if you can find one. Send them to me. It's Alibaba and the 40 thieves we're working with. So finally figured out, buy them off instead of killing them. Instead of bombing them, just give them money. They'll fight for you instead of against you. I disagree with you entirely. Totally. Be here.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. Welcome to the program, 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about Obama's background, his money tree, and why the media is so nice to him. With regard to tonight's debate, it's a non-debate. It's a non-issue. There's no differential that's going to be determined tonight, and that's because Hillary's already blown the election. She refuses to state in more ways than one that you're a radical, you're a 60s leftist, and I'm a centrist with experience. She won't say it, and that's because the Democrat Party has been hijacked by the left-wing crazies. They own it. It's Soros's money. It's a lot of Middle Eastern money. And they're right now running the Democrat Party. And on the other side, we have the weak old man already apologizing, McCain having his Bob Dole moments. So we have trouble in America. We need a very strong, honorable leader, and I don't see one out there, truthfully. Yeah, I'd vote for McCain over Obama because I don't know who Obama is. I do know who McCain is. And although McCain is a weak, tired, old glue horse, he's a predictable, weak, tired, old glue horse whose loyalty to America I don't question for 1 second. I can't say that about Mr. Hussein Obama. I have no idea where Hussein Obama's loyalty lies. Not one iota of trust do I have in the man. Why should I? Why should I trust Obama any more than I trust any other politician? Okay, why? So if you want to talk about any of this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Okay? KNEW, San Francisco. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, Michael, I just want to say, you know, people keep talking about a racial element to the campaign. Barack Obama's presidency and candidacy is all about race, and I think nothing more. I think his support for the black community is nothing outside of racial solidarity, and I think on his agenda as president would be really just to marginalize white people in America. I think so you can shift the balance of power, and unfortunately, I think after his presidency, within just a couple of decades, the United States of America could potentially disappear from that. I think it's just going to be rampant racism.
I know is that when Louis Farrakhan said that I support him, and he's the hope for the world. I know he was referring to the third world. Louis Farrakhan has a track record of hating Christians, Jews, the nation of America, and supporting his own nation, his own invented nation, which, by the way, Muslims don't even accept, so far as I know. Traditional Muslims don't accept the nation of Islam, by the way. That's a separate story that the media won't touch, but it's of no interest to me. All I know is you can tell a man by his backers. And if a questionable Ku Klux Klan member came out, some grand wizard, and said he supports John McCain, what do you think the media would say?
I mean, I think you have no chance.
What do you think the media would do if the grand wizard came out with a cloak and a pointy hat and said, I support John McCain, he's the hope of the world? Tell me what all the brave Bolsheviks in the mainstream media would do. Well, why is that when the equivalent of the Ku Klux Klan comes out, for Obama, it's like it didn't happen? Could you explain that to me? You know the answer, because red diaper dopa babies run the media. I spent the whole day yesterday on the movies, didn't I? Did you hear yesterday's show? Not him. I'm talking to myself already. That's all. 1-800-4. I love when you have the interlocutor and he's not there. It's like it's having an Aristotelian dialogue with yourself in a mirror. It's like Madhouseville. Today is one of those days. I really shouldn't even be on the radio. Why am I on the radio today? I don't even want to talk about this garbage. Is there anything else you want to talk about? What a bunch of garbage. No wonder people are tuning out of, you know, turn on, tune in. Who cares about this? Who cares about this? Not even the election yet. Then Hillary Clinton goes on the 700 Club and declares that she's basically almost ready to roll on the floor with snakes and acetic acid. Listen to clip 13.
My faith has sustained me. It has informed me. It has saved me. It has chided me. It has challenged me.
It hasn't saved her. I'm surprised she didn't get on the floor with rolling eyes and say, Lord, thank you for saving me. Listen to clip 12 on the 700 Club.
You know, forgiveness is just a word unless you're really confronted with the necessity of having to exercise it, and then it is the hardest work you are ever called upon to do. I was well aware of everyone else's opinion and everyone else's, you know, second guessing, but my faith protected me and gave me the space and the time to really come to an understanding of what was right for me and my family.
Wait a minute, what do you mean the space? What does Jesus have to do with being a space cadet? I missed something in that. What do you mean her faith gave her space? That was an amalgamation of fundamentalist jargon combined with New Age jargon. I love that jump. Let's hear 11.
Are you misunderstood? And if you are, why?
You know, I have to believe I am, because time and time again, people who have been criticizing me in very harsh and personal terms, once they have gotten to know me, have apologized to me, have asked even for my forgiveness.
Oh, yeah. Forgiveness? Oh, I love that. It's like a school thing. Who is this jerk on the 700 Club with that little voice of his? Once people who have criticized her harshly have gotten to know her, they've apologized. You betcha. If you were taken in a back room with her and her friends from Arkansas, you'd apologize also. You'd give her your lunch for the rest of your life. If you were put in a back room with her and her friends from Arkansas, from MENA Airport, you'd also apologize. Go to 10.
there is an agenda at work for a lot of people. You know, some people do it for ideological reasons or partisan political advantage, and some do it for commercial, you know, just to kind of, you know, use me as a kind of target to stir up emotions and passions.
Oh, ho, 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 ho. Oh, yes. Yes, you're just a little old nice lady. Nice lady who wants to rule the world. We use you as a target to stir up emotions and passions. Look, I don't have the inclination to spend the next 12 days explaining to you why she herself stirs up emotions and passions and why she's the most distrusted woman in the United States of America. That's not the issue. McCain is the problem. If she loses, it will be because of the man you're about to hear in clip 14. Go ahead.
So, Hillary said, in 2005, the United States Congress adopted the Bush-Cheney energy bill, which gave...
Okay, let's stop here. I've explained to you the psychodynamics of this marriage. I've explained to you that he is seething with rage that she has taken center stage only because of the nasty thing called the term limits. Damn if it wasn't for that Constitution. Out damn spot out, I say. If only that nasty little Constitution could be eliminated, why then Caligula himself could be receiving all of this adulation. Caligula himself could be receiving this adulation and this attention. But no, it was his, I can't say the word, but it begins with an H, not with a B. It was his Hillary that's getting all of this attention because he tried to use the factotum of his wife to take over again. And suddenly we saw it. Everyone saw this. And they said, you know what? We don't want 8 more years of them. I'll take a chance on this unknown man, Obama, rather than having these people back. We've had them. We know what we're going to get with them. We don't want it anymore. The Democrats are flocking to Obama for a number of reasons, mainly for hysterical reasons, since he has no history to flock to. It's not as though he cured polio. Now, if Obama had cured polio while he was a doctor in Chicago working with the inner city poor, or had he cured blindness in the Transvaal as an aid worker for the United Nations, I would vote for him possibly myself, irrespective of his politics. They're treating him as always a combination of Louis Pasteur, Albert Schweitzer, the man who can stop global warming. Of course, anybody can stop global warming because nature has already stopped it. I don't know if you've seen the article, which should be up on my website, but I doubt that it's up. We're having a lot of trouble today on michaelsavage.com, one trouble after another. But on my website, michaelsavage.com, when you ever get there in the next few years, when it's fixed, you'll see an article that proves beyond a reasonable doubt that we're entering a small ice age again. In fact, the Arctic ice pack has grown thick while Gore lied. The winter in America is the coldest on record since 1966, while Gore lied and raised hundreds of millions of dollars for his fraud. While Gore continues to lie, some scientists have actually said, now, wait a minute, let's analyze temperatures on Earth since 1906. And it turns out we've had the coolest winter since 1906. Now, the last I checked, the automobile was not quite really prevalent in 1906, yet we had a very, very, very interesting period of time there. So we don't know why. In fact, I explained to you on the show long before this debate on global warming began, several years ago, in fact, I studied the records in California on temperatures and heat all on my own. And in the 1870s, there was such heat in the state of California that cornfields caught fire spontaneously. Now, that was long before the Model T Ford started croaking out fumes around America. Long before the Model T Ford, we had a heat wave in America that was beyond comprehension in the 1870s. So what do you blame that on? You blame that on mankind? Well, no, there were no crackpot liars in the 1870s. They knew it was an act of nature, force of nature. They know nature is unpredictable. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, sometimes it snows in the summer in weird places. Sometimes it's like an ice storm in the winter in places, and that's part of the beauty of being alive, the unpredictability of nature. That is, until the radical leftists came along and invented this concept of man-induced, anthropogenic global warming. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Thank you. This is sort of cool. I don't even know, but Jessica Alba is pregnant, and I saw earlier Cate Blanchett is pregnant, and that's very exciting. Two pregnant women here tonight at the Oscars. Then again, obviously, the night is still young. And and Jack is here. So perhaps, sir, we will retally at the end of the night.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. So we hear the dirtbag, Jon Stewart, insulting two pregnant women, implying that Jack Nicholson impregnated them, and glorifying again the salacious vermin of Hollywood. I tried to watch the Oscars to some extent last, and I did. I did my best, I promise you. But what I noticed in watching the Oscars last night is that in my day, my father used to say to me when we went to the movies, you'll notice, Michael, that the criminal never wins. The criminal never wins when I went to the movie. The bad guy always loses, ends up in the gutter or dead or in jail. And I said, why is that, Dad? He said, because there's an unspoken agreement between the movie makers and the FBI that they will not make movies that glorify criminals. The message must always be crime does not pay. Now, I want you to fast forward to the Red Diaper Doper Baby internationalist, the international Red Diaper Doper Baby, who lives for the international audience, the vermin who has made his fortune in America, yet hates the country, hates the military, hates the family, hates the police, hates Christians in particular. We have gone from crime does not pay to only crime pays. As I said to you, when Hoover was head of the FBI, the hated Hoover, the Hoover that was hated by the vermin of today, there was an unspoken code in Hollywood. And now we have this, where the 60s anti-hero, the 60s criminal, as it were, is glorified. And that's who wins the prizes in the new Hollywood. The new Hollywood where only crime pays. So who are the heroes and who are the winners in the new Hollywood? What is the ethos of the new Hollywood? Why, it's the new hero. Who is the new hero? The murderer, the pimp, the rapist, the whore, the anti-American. In other words, when I was a kid and I went to the movies, I came out of a theater on a Saturday night, my stars were in my eyes. I was transfixed, not just transformed. I wanted to be Audie Murphy in To Hell and Back. I wanted to be Gary Cooper. I wanted to be John Wayne. I wanted to be any one of a number of heroes, whether they be pilots or policemen or in some cases doctors. There were always heroes that I could look up to. Can you name one recent movie that made a man, a particularly a white man, into a hero? Can you name one where a white man walks away as a hero? He's not shown to be something other than a murderer, pimp, rapist, or a prostitute? I don't think so. And so I say to you, tonight I'm going to call for something that no one has called for yet. I, Michael Savage, tonight am calling for the Fairness Doctrine to be enacted immediately. I would like to see the Fairness Doctrine enacted immediately in Hollywood. I'd like to see a Fairness Doctrine enacted immediately by the Republican Congress, saying that every time a movie is made glorifying a pimp, a rapist, a whore, or a murderer, I get to make a movie that glorifies a decent American, whether he be a soldier, an airman, a policeman, a doctor, a teacher, somebody decent, instead of the vermin that the Red Diaper Doper Babies create for all the world to despise us by. Make no mistake about it. I've told you this many times, and I'm going to say it until eventually it seeps into the consciousness of the world. We keep hearing that the fundamentalist Muslim world hates us because of our foreign policy. Now, that's probably true to a small extent. But the bigger reason that the fundamentalist Muslim world hates us is not so much our foreign policy. Sure, Israel's a thorn in their side, but that's a separate issue. The real reason they hate us is because of our export product called movies, the movies that they will not let their daughters or their sons or their wives see, the movies that they do not want their children to see, where the murderer, the pimp, the rapist, and the whore are glorified and held up as role models. That's what they're fighting over. You'll never read this anywhere, and you won't see this anywhere, because today the news and the entertainment business have merged into one. There was a time that the news business was separate from the entertainment business. And then we saw the arrival on the scene of an Australian who had specialized in the most salacious, horrible newspapers the world had ever seen. He made a fortune putting violence and crime on the front of his papers, and he made more money. And the more violence and crime, and the more the murderer, the pimp, the rapist, and the whore was glorified on the front pages of his newspapers in Australia, the more... At the movies that won prizes in the new Hollywood, where the red diaper doper baby rules, you will see that La Vie en Rose for Best Actress is a biopic of a hooker and a junkie who could sing. You will then see that the movie Michael Clayton, where a Best Supporting Actress a prize was given, is about an evil corporation and a good class action lawyer. Did you hear me? A good class action lawyer and another evil American corporation. Now, what about There Will Be Blood? Violence and blood every 10 or 15 minutes. What's the next movie that won every award imaginable? By the so-called Coen brothers. No Country for Old Men. Best director. Best movie. Motion picture of the year. Best supporting actor. And what is it about? Violence, blood, drugs. Violence, blood, drugs. And what else won? Best original screenplay. Movie called Juno. What's it about? Unwed mother. Not about a Christian mother. Not about a Jewish mother who marries and has a baby within the bounds of wedlock. Not about a normal, healthy American woman of any kind, but again about an unwed mother and her travails. Again, what is glorified? Violence, blood, drugs, evil, hookers, and junkies. Once again, we see the 1960s have permeated the movie business to the extent that the ethos of the 60s is completely now the ethos of Hollywood. That is, the so-called anti-hero is glorified. Anything anti-American is now considered heroic. Anything anti-corporate, even though Hollywood is run by corporations, is now seen as a viable and clean. And who are the heroes? Well, once again, the whore, the rapist, the pimp, and the murderer. Can you name one movie with a hero you did want to emulate when you left the theater? We can go way past John Wayne and Gary Cooper and Humphrey Bogart. We can bring it up to a closer time than that. This all collapsed after the 1960s when marijuana was deeply ingrained or started to become deeply ingrained in the white culture. It was originally restricted largely to the lower classes, largely to the jazz musician class. And then it permeated the white middle class. Children mainly of communist, socialist backgrounds, anarchist a little thrown in. In other words, red diaper babies who were given dope. They became RDDBs, as I named them, red diaper doper babies. And many of them went to Hollywood. Not so strangely enough, they went to Hollywood, where we now see we are at the nadir of the bottom. It can get lower. Yes, we can have movies. For example, about incest, they have not been promulgated to any great extent. There's been hints at incest, for example, in Gladiator, but that did go on in ancient Rome, particularly in the upper classes of the really degenerate mentality. But we haven't yet seen a good movie about incest, have we? Well, maybe that's next year's prize. We have to stay tuned to see what else the mushroom-eating red diaper doper baby of Hollywood gives us. Incest is on the table. How about sex with dogs, sex with animals? We haven't seen that yet. That could be considered a great breakthrough. Of course, they would have to do it with a little art company in Paris and then bring the actor or actress in and the dog perhaps or the goat. We don't know, and give the dog or the goat an award. But that could be something new for Jon Stewart to do next year at the 81st Academy Awards next year. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I am not Ted Kennedy, so I will not try this. I am not campaigning for a French candidate amongst Francophiles here in America. I mean, I loved Edith Piaf as a youngster. Don't get me wrong. I played her music continuously from ages. Ooh, I went through the 18 to 19 period, you know. drinking in West Village bars with sawdust on the floor and thinking I was a character out of a combination. Well, I don't know exactly what movie I was in, but, you know, kids are in movies. They walk around in movies. I don't know what characters I was playing at the time, but I thought I was sort of in an Edith Piaf black and white movie for a certain period of my life. And that's the point I'm trying to make. We are impressionable as human beings, and particularly when we're hypnotized in a dark theater. And consequently, we want to see characters that we should emulate. We certainly don't want to emulate murderers or pimps or rapists or whores, do we? Well, tell that to the Weinstein brothers. That's their stock and trade. In fact, there is a rumor going around the movie industry, which I read this morning in the New York Post by a film reviewer, where he says it is alleged that the Weinsteins spent $15 million to make certain that the Coen brothers movie won the prize, the prizes that they won. I don't know if there's any truth to it. I'm sure they're above board. I'm sure they wouldn't stoop to that level, to the level, for example, of a presidential election to buy a prize. After all, in America, you know, things are so fair. But now let's look back to another time. As I said, I'm calling tonight on the Savage Nation for something unique, something you haven't heard about yet on ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, or Fox News. You know, you can only hear it on the Savage Nation, where fertile minds can be found, particularly mine. I want to see the fairness doctrine applied first in Hollywood, where every time another salacious movie is shown that glorifies a murderer, a pimp, a rapist, a whore, or where the flag of the United States is treated unfairly, where vulgarity is shown, where cruelty is shown, where prostitution is shown, I get to make a movie. I get to say, no, Mr. Weinstein, cut, cut. I'm with the Fairness Doctrine Board. I want to see a movie made with a different scene in it, Mr. Weinstein. Would you like that? Oh, you wouldn't like that? It's unfair. It's called censorship to you. Really, it should only apply to talk radio because you hate conservatives? Really? Well, it ain't going to happen, Mr. Red Diaper Dopa Baby. That is unless you buy the presidency, and God only knows if the 1919 World Series can be fixed, what people might be able to buy. But let's see what I've dug up for you on the Savage Nation today, something that you haven't heard about. Do you know that until 1967, there was a United States Motion Picture Production Code that went in place in 1930? It was adopted by the Motion Picture Association of America. It was adopted in 1930. It was enforced in 1934. It was abandoned during the hippie madness of the 60s. They threw it out in 1967 when all hell broke loose and the murderers, pimps, rapists, and whores became the norm. And what did the Motion Picture Production Code of 1930 say that the Hollywood types had to do? One, no picture shall be produced that will lower the moral standards of those who see it. That means 99% of the movies couldn't be made today. Hence, the sympathy of the audience should never be thrown to the side of crime, wrongdoing, evil, or sin. There goes the Coen brothers. There goes the Weinsteins. They'd have to be selling popcorn in a theater somewhere in Bensonhurst instead of being the moguls that they are. They'd be out of business. Next, law, natural or human, shall not be ridiculed, nor shall sympathy be created for its violation. Natural or human law shall not be ridiculed? What in the world is natural law that shall not be ridiculed? Goodness, there was a phrase called human or natural law. What in the world would that mean? Nor shall sympathy be created for its violation. Now, what in the world do you think the violation of human law or natural law might refer to? Could it be man with man? Could it be girl with girl? Why, there we go again. Some of the top moguls wouldn't be sitting in tuxedos. They'd be cleaning toilets. Savage. But a goodie. Many of you requested a repeat, so I played it for you because it was highly requested. We did so. Now we're back to you, and if you want to call on this or any other topic, we can do so. I know that most of you are waiting to hear the debate. It's not a debate. It's over. We all know that the fanatics are running a Democrat Party. It's run by the fanatic wing of the fanatic left wing of America has hijacked the Democrat Party. Make no mistake about it. That's not the Democrat Party of your father. It's not the Democrat Party of JFK. This is a fanatical Democrat Party ruled by the money of Saudi Arabia and George Soros. The SS runs it. Los Angeles. Matt, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, I think your show is great. I agree with you with the fact that there's a lot of crap on TV, a lot of crap in movies. Kids don't have anyone to look up to. But I think there's something else other than the government. What about parenting getting worse over the last few decades? I think if parents took a bigger role, then...
Well, of course parents can tell a child what to watch and what not to watch and not let him access it. I've heard that discussion, but certainly there's a role to play by the movie makers themselves, but they're out of control. They're a law unto themselves. Now, you do know there was a motion picture code until 1967. You heard me talk about that, right?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Well, why do you suppose America needed a motion picture code from 1934 to 1967? Why would there have been such a code? Because people need rules, or else they're animals. It's an anarchy. If we didn't have traffic lights, there'd be anarchy on the highways. People would go when they want, crash into each other, run through intersections. And so we need rules in every industry. For example, if we didn't have rules, food safety rules, we'd have more contaminated food than we already have. You see what happens with China, where there are no food safety rules. And we need movie safety rules, which have been thrown out the window as a result of a number of factors, not the least of which was the Cultural Revolution of the 1960s, wherein all of the rules were thrown out. And then, of course, today the movie moguls are so powerful they own Congress, and Congress is afraid of them. Thanks for the call. No, we need rules so we can have a movie safety code the same way that we have a food safety and drug safety code. They are very powerful instruments of the mind, and they're brainwashing children into becoming whores, pimps, drug addicts, and other types of characters that the world does not need. I have in my hand one of my favorite books from when I was young, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, a great genius, way ahead of his time. Many of you read it when you were young, published in 1932. And I want to read you a piece from it to show you what he was predicting would be coming. And it's about a group of little babies that were hatched in a nursery. You see, there was no longer any parental birthing. The whole world had become that of the lesbian community of Oakland, California, which uses turkey basters. The concept of a man and a woman had already been thrown out, led, of course, by our friends in trousers and skirts who don't like trousers dancing with skirts, but like trousers dancing with trousers and skirts dancing with skirts. And so they have fertilizers that make alphas, betas, gammas, deltas, and epsilons undergoing the Volkanovsky process, where they grow into perfectly formed embryos and every embryo into a full-sized adult, making 96 human beings grow where only one grew before. Progress. See what a progress is? See progress? Why I love it so much? And so the original egg is turned by the government into anything from 8 to 96 embryos. But then they had to improve upon nature. They had to improve upon nature the way we've already begun to, where we hear stories from obstetricians today who come to me with tears in their eyes saying that a mother had them abort an embryo because it had blue eyes or brown eyes or green eyes and they wanted something else. And they were forced to abort an embryo. They wanted to create something perfect. And they said the Volkanovsky process was one of the major instruments of social stability. You wouldn't want to have men and women having babies because they could turn out to be anything. You need social stability, standard men and women in uniform batches. And so then you speed forward to chapter 2 of Brave New World, and in it, the children have been born, and we hear this, now bring in the children. 8-month-old babies are brought in. The infants are unloaded on the floor. Now turn them so that they can see the flowers and books. The babies then begin to crawl towards those clusters of colors, and they approach the flowers and books. As they approached, the sun came out of a momentary eclipse behind a cloud. The roses flamed up as though with a sudden passion from within. A new and profound significance seemed to suffuse the shining pages of the books. From the ranks of the crawling babies came little squeals of excitement, gurgles, and twitterings of pleasure. The director rubbed his hands. Excellent, he said. It might also have been done on purpose. The swiftest babies were already at their goal. Small hands reached out uncertainly, touched, grasped, unpetaling the transfigured roses, crumbling the illuminated pages of the books. Then the director said, watch carefully. The head nurse who was standing by a switchboard at the other end of the room pressed down a little lever. There was a violent explosion. Shriller and ever shriller, a siren shrieked. Alarm bells maddeningly sounded. The children started, screamed. Their faces were distorted with terror. And now the director shouted, "Now we proceed to rub in the lesson with a mild electric shock." He waved his hand again, and the head nurse pressed a second lever. The screaming of the baby suddenly changed its tone. There was something desperate, almost insane. The little bodies twitched and stiffened. Their limbs moved jerkily as if to the tug of unseen wires. "We can electrify that whole strip of floor," bawled the director. "But that's enough," he signaled to the nurse. And then the nurse asks the director why they did that. "Observe," said the director triumphantly. "Observe. Books and loud noises, flowers and electric shocks. Already in the infant mind, these couples were compromisingly linked. And after 200 repetitions at the same or of a similar lesson would be wedded indissolubly. What man has joined, nature is powerless to put asunder. They'll grow up with what the psychologists used to call an instinctive hatred of books and flowers. Reflexes unalterably conditioned. They'll be safe from books and botany all their lives," the director turned to his nurses. "Take them away again." Still yelling, the khaki babies were loaded onto their dumbwaiters and wheeled out, leaving behind the smell of sour milk and a most welcome silence. So they asked him, "Why do you want the children to dislike or hate books and botany?" Patiently, the director explained, "If the children were made to scream at the sight of a rose, that was on grounds of high economic policy. Not so very long ago, a century or thereabouts, gammas, deltas, even epsilons, had been conditioned to like flowers, flowers in particular, and wild nature in general. The idea was to make them want to be going out into the country at every available opportunity and so compel them to consume transport." "And didn't they consume transport?" asked the student. "Quite a lot," the director said, "but nothing else. Primroses and landscapes," he pointed out, "have one grave defect. They are gratuitous. A love of nature keeps no factories busy. It was decided to abolish the love of nature, at any rate among the lower classes, to abolish the love of nature, but not the tendency to consume transport. The problem was to find an economically sounder reason for consuming transport than a mere affection for primroses. We conditioned the masses to hate the country," concluded the director. "But simultaneously, we conditioned them to love all country sports. So they consume manufactured articles as well as transport, hence those electric shocks." "I see," said the student. There was a silence. "Once upon a time," the director began, "there was a little boy called Ruben Rabinovich," and he goes on. "Do you understand what I'm telling you about Brave New World that Huxley foresaw? How many of you go out into nature simply to observe nature? Think about it. Maybe you still go out in nature, but you've consumed something, haven't you? You've consumed hiking boots, skis, snowboards, binoculars, I don't know what else. Millions and millions and millions of things you've consumed in order to go out into nature. You think you need them? You don't need them. You've been brainwashed or conditioned into thinking you need them. You'd be afraid to go out into nature without a tool or equipment. Nature has been decimated by the snowmobile, for example. I used to love to walk in the high Sierras in the snow. I don't do it anymore because I don't want to see a moron zipping by and get smoke in my nose like I can be on a city street. No, I don't want to see another idiot shooting by in a snowmobile, decimating the landscape and scaring the creatures. I don't do much of that anymore. I go out, you know, as much as I can without any tools or apparatus. So there it is. Now, what am I getting at? Conditioning, condition responses. I'm getting at you and the political landscape. You have been brainwashed by forces you can't even imagine. Those of you who think you're free and those of you who think you're the freest are the so-called progressives. But you, in fact, are the most brainwashed. You have been the most brainwashed and the most damaged by society. You actually think a man from Chicago's wards, from the Daily Machine, was invented yesterday and he's as pure as the driven snow. You think he's going to change America, but you don't know how he's going to change America. But you're brainwashed like the infants, and you have no idea how to even ask the question. You don't even know what questions to ask the Democrats, do you? You are the most brainwashed, you progressives. You are suicidal, but you're not pulling me over the cliff. You're never going to pull me over the cliff. Never. This is the Savage Nation. Have a nice break.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot. Full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The sound and fury quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth. He's talking about the ephemeral nature of life and how brief it is. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage. And then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think many of us feel this and don't talk about it. We take the Prozac, or we take the psychic Prozac called television, or the psychic Prozac called football or baseball or basketball or rap music or whatever it may be, or the crack or the cocaine or the marijuana or the alcohol or whatever it may be, or the running. And you can get very, very cynical about it all and say, what's the point of trying if it's all a charade and we're going to die anyway? You know, that's depressing. And there are many answers to that question that are life-affirming. There are many reasons to go on. I learned so much in my childhood, I didn't even know I was learning it. That's the beautiful part of it. In that sense, I would say I had a very rich childhood because so much was seen and heard and overheard. And I look back now, look, here's a story I told maybe once for 2 seconds relating to the ephemeral nature of life and how you can really go down, you know, off the deep end if you look at this the wrong way and you don't have the right spiritual or emotional support. There was a woman in the neighborhood in Queens, attached houses. I can't get any more detailed. The attached houses, which to us was a gigantic step up. It was like the Queens Palace from where I had come from, a little green yard. And one of the neighbors in the block, he was really high class because he was a doctor. So he had a wife who had a nervous breakdown, so-called. I don't even think they use the phrase anymore, nervous breakdown. I don't even know what it is. What happened was she stayed at home all day and she wandered the streets of Queens, or that neighborhood, and she would take people's arms and say, what's the meaning of living if we're only going to die? Now, she had 2 children and the other women didn't know what to say to her. She could not understand why she should live if only she was going to die. Then she would say, but my children are also born to die. I mean, that spooked out a lot of the women in the neighborhood, so they stopped talking to her. Now, maybe she was, in her own way, touching upon this sound and fury quote from Shakespeare of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And haven't you seen that picture? And how did you get past that? What gives you the reason to struggle and go on? Why do you struggle? You ever look at your children and say, they're too going to fade like dust, ashes to ashes and dust to dust? And yes, we all get those thoughts if we're human. You look at your pet, your fish, your dog, your cat. You know, I got a box upstairs with ashes in it. I got a mother and a father and a brother in a grave and a grandmother and grandfather and ancestors in graves, as you do. We all do. And yet, you know, it's a strange society. We never talk about death in that way. All we talk about is victimhood and suffering and how everyone's a victim. But do we really talk about the meaning of life and the meaning of death, or only about death as an opposite to life, meaning you're no longer a consumer? See, once you die, you're of no use to the Murdochs and the Morlocks and the meatheads who need you as a consumer, an idiot to watch or an idiot to buy. In other words, a consumer. If you're dead, you're no longer a good consumer, except perhaps you can still buy a casket from one of these operations. Perhaps they'll figure out a way to sell you a conservative casket or a liberal casket with an inscription on it. It's probably not a bad business where they now start monogramming caskets or something. But what motivates me to go on, for example? How do I do this every day? Why do I do this anymore? I don't really need the income. My children are grown. They're doing very well. I have enough to, you know, basically retire on. I could have retired a long time ago. Why do I do this? You'll have to ask yourself. Why am I not as desperate to sell you something as some men are who are younger with young children? And I understand why they have to peddle and they have to sell you and they have to con you day and night to sell you another item or another. I understand it. They're younger than me by probably 20 years, many of them, and they haven't made their fortune or their marks, and they're very insecure about that. So they continue to sell you things that you don't really need. So therefore, if I'm not really selling you anything, what is it that motivates me every day? Well, it's an obligation to God primarily. I know you say, well, who is he kidding? What, are you kidding me? Take it for what it is. I don't really care whether you believe me or not. I know I mean every word I just said to you. You see, I was ruined in life several times, primarily by liberalism. Liberalism destroyed me, or almost destroyed me, and almost put me into the grave. The liberals, through affirmative action, stole my birthright. They took it from me. They turned me into a nun person. And they said that less qualified women and less qualified minorities only need apply. And they said, you shall not apply, even though you are a white male, you're of no value whatsoever, to our new America. Well, it was tough for me to bear. And had I let it get to me, I would have died or never struggled again. And I told you what happened. I told you how it happened. And it's amazing. It was a certain time in my life, and it was about 16 years ago. And everything had gone bad for me because of affirmative action and because of a few scoundrels in the vitamin business, ruthless gonoffs of the lowest order. Things had gone really bad for me. And I wanted to give up. I really did. Well, my son, we were living in a, and this is an interesting story in a way. I had to move back to a house that I had purchased, a small house that I had purchased a few years before as a rental unit. And things had gotten so bad, I had to move into my own rental unit. And it wasn't a happy time for us. The children were still teenagers, blah, blah, blah. So I was sitting in this dark little horrendous room that I called a study, which was really a converted nursery. It was disgusting, with a little tiny window. There was nothing, there was no nobility in it whatsoever. It was a complete failure. And this was after a PhD, two master's degrees, 16 books. No matter what I did, it was like I had dug for oil. I was like a wildcatter, and 1,000 wells had come up dry. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. So I called my son in, who was a teenager, and I said, son, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to retire because I there's no point to this. Well, he said to me, you can't retire. He said, that's giving up. He said, men retire at 65. I got so pissed off at him, I chased him out of the room, and I ran after him down the block. And you know what? Because of that, I was embarrassed. And for him, I had to get off my behind, get out of the gutter, and I had to struggle again. That's when I created the tape, the first radio tape. So help me God. A few months later, I created the mock radio tape and sent it out to 400 stations, and the rest is really history. That turned me around. But, you know, it was based upon a lot of prayer and a lot of thought and family. Family keeps us together. So having said that, I had only asked God for one thing. During the darkest moments of my failures, well, really, I should say the failures of our society, which took some of the most talented white men in history and put them on the shelf in order to promote people who were less qualified, simply to make people feel better, and in order to introduce socialism to America at a faster pace. I said to God, all I ask you for is to give me a living. I beg you not for riches. I beg you not for fame. I beg you only for a living. Well, I now have a very good living in talk radio and as a writer. But you see, it came with a burden. Remember I told you that God answered my prayers, but there's always something attached to his answer? He didn't say, here, go, you're going to win the lottery. Because if he had said, here, because you suffered so much, my son, put $4 on number 933B7, and you're going to win $90 million in fastball or something. Well, I probably would have blown my head off by now if I had won some kind of lottery. I'm a worker. I was raised to work. I'm going to work until probably I can't work anymore. And it's because I was raised this way. It's in my genes. My father, to him, the most important value in a boy was working. Every time he mocked me, it was because I was too lazy or I wasn't working hard enough. And the way he mocked me is he would say to his friends when I was a little boy in his store, look at this, look at the worker I have for a son. He's a real hard worker, isn't he? And the other men would say, oh, come on, leave him alone. He's not a bad kid. He'll be a good worker. And my father would look at me and sarcastically say, yeah, look at the worker I have. always dozing off or something to that effect. So to him, work was a great value. It's almost laughable in this hedonistic age that we live in where work is considered déclassé. Well, I know that there are many men who have much less than I do financially who are retired. And good luck to you if you are, and I understand it. But I'm not made that way. I wouldn't know what to do with myself from the beginning of the day to the end. I wouldn't know how to spend my time. Now, maybe that's sad. Maybe it is sad that I don't know how to enjoy myself on a golf course or a tennis court. It is possible, but it's not in my genes. I did not learn how to play golf. I learned how to sled on a cobblestone street in the Bronx. I did not learn how to ski. And when I went to college, there were kids even in Queens College or Working College who were going to ski lifts and skiing. I'm not a skier. I didn't understand the fun of skiing, and I know those who do. In fact, when my children were very young, I took them skiing. I taught them how to ski. I figured it's a great American sport, and I admire those who can really ski. But when I have gone to the mountains in the last few years during ski season, I don't want to ski. It's a zoo. It's a zoo. It looks like a bunch of automatons. Clankety, 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 clank. Line them up. Here they come. Take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night, take them up, shoot them down. Get them drunk at night, take them up, shoot them down. Clankety clank, clankety clank. Where's the beauty in that? I used to go to the High Sierras and I used to walk in the winter. I used to snow walk. I don't do it anymore. You know why? Because of yahoos on snowmobiles. I won't even walk in the woods anymore. Do I want to listen to a putt shooting by on a snowmobile? Shooting out dirty, ugly fumes on a snowfield that I used to walk on? In the absolute silence. Did you ever hear the silence of a snowfield? Can you still hear it? The whoosh and the hiss of snow and sound? America has become a gigantic noise cesspool. There's almost nowhere to go anymore for any peace and quiet. Every neighborhood. There's not a neighborhood in America that is affluent and beautiful that you can live in any peace. Because everyone is greedier than his neighbor. I think I'll put in marble. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I think I'll put in granite. I'll put in granite and I'll flip it and I'll make money and I'll screw the next person. Everyone's suddenly Donald Trump. Everyone's a Donald Trump, and from morning till night, every house is being renovated. Every house is being redone. You can't even live in your own houses anymore. So tell me where to go to get peace and quiet in the United States of America. You have an answer to that one? Well, I guess you have to move to the country. You got to move to the country. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty place from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle, life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. This is the Savage Nation hoping to signify something.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, let's say you're subject to depression. Anyone with a brain is, incidentally. Anyone who can think and feel is subject to depression. Hey, hello, secret. Secret to everyone out there. Anybody who can think and feel and actually knows what's going on in America and the world gets depressed from time to time. But anybody, why am I depressed? Just look around. Take a look at Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and you'll know why you're depressed. Take a look at George Bush. Take a look at what's going on around the world, and you have a good reason to understand why you're agitated and depressed. But the fact of the matter is it's been part of the human condition from the beginning of time. People have always gotten depressed, but they found ways around it other than going to some whack job who put him on an antidepressant, you know, so they could wind up, you know, going on a rampage in a mall 3 years later after bottling up all of their emotions when the Prozac wore off or whatever. You mark my words. You want to mark this one down? Mark this one down. In your lifetime, Prozac-like compounds will be banned because of the violent reactions that often, that too often occur in users of these compounds. You mark my words. The day will come that the medico-pharmaceutical landscape will change, where they'll no longer have a grip over our government to the extent that they do, and people will finally understand that virtually every school shooting was conducted by a kid who was put on these drugs, either Ritalin first and then this stuff later on in life, to deal with the anxiety that had been induced by the Ritalin, and that eventually their violence was a direct side effect of these drugs. You mark my words, this drug will be seen, this class of drugs will eventually be outlawed because of the subpopulation in which it induces violence. And it's quite a large subpopulation, or suicide, by the way. There's a whole spate of suicides and homicides being committed by Prozac takers. Say, oh, he's crazy. I'm crazy. You wait and see how crazy I am. I guarantee you this drug will become, it'll become one of the, it'll be like, what's that drug? It'll be the thalidomide of the mind. This class of drugs will be determined to be the thalidomide of the mind. Another new phrase for you for 2008. This class of drugs will be seen as producing freakish results in people. So what I was getting at is there are natural ways to deal with these, with anxiety, for example. A lot of people suffer anxiety. Anxiety is part of the human condition as well. It's not an abnormal phenomenon. It's not unique to you if you feel you're anxious. You don't need to reach for a pill. Why do you think so many people are running in the morning and are running around reservoirs and exhausting themselves? They also feel these things. They also have frustrations and fears and anxieties and feelings of dread or running of the mind. You know, Darwin himself suffered from a condition that today is being treated as a medical condition. It never was a medical condition. I think he called it running headedness, where his thoughts, he couldn't control his thoughts, and they ran on and on and on. I have it all the time. That's where creativity is a fountain. It's like a bubbling fountain. You don't bottle it up with a whack job putting you on a drug. It's because of the drug nation. We have Bush as a president. We have global warming as an idea that would even be accepted for a nanosecond from a shyster like Gore. And we have a slate of candidates, all of whom make you want to puke. I'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Now, I want to move on to a different topic. There was a great article in the New York Times yesterday, in the Sunday Times, called The Falling Down Professions. And it's about doctors and lawyers who wish they were not. It says that about a fifth of the associates in large law firms in any given year drop out of large law firms, and 20% of lawyers overall will suffer depression at some point in their careers. It says as of 2006, nearly 60% of doctors polled by the American College of Physician Executives said they had considered getting out of medicine because of low morale in doctors now, and nearly 70% knew someone who already had left medicine. A lot of them don't like medicine anymore because they've been turned into paper pushers. Law and medicine, we read, have always been very demanding, but they were prestigious in the past. They made good money. They had authority. They were perched atop the other professions. Everybody thought being a doctor or a lawyer was the greatest thing to be. But we realize today that they've lost their allure and their status, and it is not about money. They say that the pay is still good, and people know that. But they say something is missing, say many doctors, lawyers, and career experts, and that is the old sense of purpose, of respect, of living at the center of American society, and in essence, embodying its definition of what is success, that is being a doctor or a lawyer. So what is going on is multifaceted as to why people are feeling these things. In fact, applications to law schools and medical schools have declined from recent highs. The number of law school applicants dropped from 98,000 in 2004 to 83,000 in 2006. And that was on top of a 5% slip the year before. How about medical schools? Remember how hard it used to be to get into a medical school? In 97, there were 46,000 applicants. It's now 42,000. So what are youngsters who are intelligent doing now? Well, I guess they all want to be a web designer or something like that. Some still go into these fields because of the higher calling of the profession of being a doctor or a lawyer, and they don't care about the social cachet. They care about doing you know, good for society. But for a brief segment right now, are there any doctors or lawyers out there who wish they were not? Or are there any former doctors or lawyers who left their professions and went into something else? If you care to call us at 1-800-449-8255, you can do so. And I'm doing this because I want young people to see if they can learn something from your call. Would you recommend that they do become a lawyer or a doctor? Now, let's start with money. Money is what we're all interested in. Do you know that associates at major New York law firms start at $150,000 to $180,000 a year? That's right, at a law school. Partners at the country's biggest 100 firms took home an average of $1.2 million in 06. Now, that's paltry compared to talk show hosts, but nevertheless, it's a lot for the professions other than the media. So outside of the media, they're making very good money. Many senior investment bankers, through bonuses and salaries, will average $2.25 million to $2.75 million. Doctors, whether you know it or not, vary in income tremendously. A typical physician might earn $150,000 to $300,000. A surgeon, $250,000 to $400,000. A top surgeon can earn $750,000 a year, and a superstar surgeon, $1 million or more a year. That's not really a lot of money for the kind of skill set that they have when you think about that. But something is going on. Things are going on. And what is it that's going on? Well, I don't really know what's going on. I have a feeling it's because of the control that the doctors and lawyers have lost. The lawyers have lost control of their lives in terms of the hours they have to put in. The doctors have lost control to the HMOs who make them, you know, call up a clerk to get permission to assign a wheelchair to a person with a muscular dystrophy. The doctors are also very upset with men like John Edwards, the biggest fraud in the history of the election I've ever seen, a man who built his fortune through lawsuits based upon fraudulent documentation and moronic audiences in the Ozarks. I don't know how he gets away with this. I know how. He's got idiots in the media who won't challenge him and say, look, Mr. Edwards, you say you're for change and you're an independent, but you're a crook, basically. You're a crooked lawyer who made all of his money lying to dumb juries without teeth in the Ozarks. You told him that a person who was born with a congenital disease was made this way by a doctor's mistake, Mr. Edwards. Aren't you ashamed of yourself? John Edwards, have you no shame? Well, you see, I'm not in the major media in that sense, or I'd ask him those questions. Now, you know why Obama won't come on the show, or why Edwards won't come on the show, but aren't you shocked that Giuliani won't come on the show when he's desperate for votes and you are his audience? Aren't you shocked that Romney's idiots who run his campaign aren't smart enough to know that this is the gold mine, this is the mother lode of independent voters? Aren't you shocked that they don't know that? Or is it that they got something to hide and they're afraid of a little truth? So anyway, the question to you is the falling down professions of lawyers or doctors. These are not my opinions. I have nothing against lawyers or doctors per se. It was a great article in the New York Times that I thought was worthy of airing on the Savage Nation today. And I'm asking you, if you're a doctor or a lawyer who wishes you were not, why not? Or what would you say to a youngster? Would you recommend that they become a doctor or a lawyer? Let's begin in the land of lawyers in New York City on WOR. Tom, welcome. Go ahead, please.
I'm Michael. How are you? I've
Good.
Been a lawyer for about 8 years now, graduated from a law school in New York. I was born and raised in New York. And my advice to a youngster who was in college or prior to college determining whether or not they'd like to be a lawyer, my advice to them would be to go a different route. And it boils down, in my opinion, to or my experience, I should say, is it's not what I thought it was going to be when I entered college and entered law school. The money is good. I'd rather not say where I'm employed, but I do work.
No, I understand. Well, what is it about law that grates you, makes you depressed, frankly? It just doesn't make you happy.
Well, quite quite frankly, I'm a litigator, and I specialize in commercial litigation as well as plaintiffs' personal injury work, which you routinely call slip and fall lawyers.
All right, whatever. Forget what I say in my characterizations. You know, we all use lawyers whether we like them or not. But the fact of the matter is there's something in the profession you don't like, and what is it?
It's just a game. It's just a big game. It's whoever has the best poker face wins, especially with personal injury litigation. It's not what you know. It's who you know.
All right. In other words, yeah, right. In other words, what system, like what judge system you're in or whatever. But, you know, I was shocked to read about 10 years ago that justice and law are not one and the same. In fact, justice has nothing to do with the law. That's fundamentally, you probably went in as a kid thinking that you were going to bring justice to issues, right?
I thought for certain I was going to do right by clients and remedy wrongs that were done to my clients. And at the end of the day, some clients are happy, other clients are not happy. And sometimes it's outside of my control. I do what I do.
In other words, cases get decided for reasons other than justice.
The time. Cases get decided sometimes because, you know, the judge and the attorney know each other very, very well. Cases get decided.
I once had an arbitration in New York City many, many years ago before I was in radio. I hired some shyster lawyer in New York. Cost me a lot of money, which I really had to scrape together. And during the break, I happened to be in the stall in the bathroom, and the lawyer I hired didn't know I was in there. You know what's coming, don't you? He went in the bathroom. I overheard him talking to the opposing attorney, and they worked a deal out on my behalf. Can you believe this? Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yes, I can believe that because it happened.
I was in an arbitration against the corrupt vitamin company from Long Island at the time. They should be visited upon the fifth generation, the crooks that they were. Thanks for the call. Dallas, Texas. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I'm a board-certified anesthesiologist in the Metroplex, and I have a lot of problems with my profession.
Well, wait. Now, first of all, anesthesiologists are at the top of their profession in terms of earnings. Isn't that still true?
It is true.
So what does an anesthesiologist earn in dollars, and not what you make, but generally, what's the approximate income?
$300,000 to $350,000 a year.
But what is the problem that you have with your specialty, or is it with the field of medicine in general?
Well, first about my specialty, I have unqualified nurses who try to legislate that they can do the same job as I can. I have government regulations which every day put more separation between me and my patient's relationship, to deal with socialistic colleagues who want to usher in an era of Obama politics, which will destroy our medicine.
So in other words, you're saying you're no longer a doctor. In essence, they're turning you into something less than the doctor in the room, the bureaucrat. It's very much like a soft communism. That's what you're really saying, because when Mao Zedong took over China, he took the surgeons out of the surgery. He put them in the laundry room if he didn't shoot them, and he took untrained laundresses and put them in the surgery, and he said, you do the surgery. And if they said they couldn't, he said, you're a counter-revolutionary, and he had them shot. That's more or less what's happening in America, isn't it?
That's exactly what's happening with these nurses. And furthermore, what's happening is we have the socialized government using the mid-level professionals to try to take out the doctors through class warfare and jealousy. They look up to us. They want to tear us down to regulations. They want to make everyone the lowest common denominator.
Isn't that terrible? It's awful. And, of course, the patient is at risk as a result of that, of using ignoramuses. You mean they're making decisions as to what kind of anesthesia to give and in what dose?
Now, nurse anesthetists work underneath anesthesiologists in a beautiful model, but some of them want to fight for independence when they are nowhere near as qualified.
And I get it. So the nurse practitioner now wants to become an anesthesiologist?
Basically, yes, sir.
Okay, and the HMOs would like that because they can pay them less than they pay you.
They would love it, and it's a perfect class warfare. Who wants to fight against nurses or when you have the big bad doctors to go against? It's really terrible.
Oh, my God. So it's the socialized medicine that's killing the medical field.
It is, and it's not about the money. I do really well. I want to be one-on-one with my patients. I don't want some joker from above or below telling me how to treat my patients. I want to be able to take my patient, treat them one-on-one, and have a close relationship. But because of the bureaucrats, I can't do that.
I hear you, my friend. Thanks. This is a very enlightening topic, but we're finding out that 60% of doctors polled said they had considered getting out of medicine because of low morale. Can you hear this? And lawyers in big firms, 20%, a fifth of them drop out of the law, legal profession. And it's not about money. It's about other things. So I'm just, for another few minutes, for young people who are listening who are trying to decide whether to be a doctor or a lawyer, an Indian chief, I've had lawyers or doctors call and explain what we're talking about here. Thus far, we heard one lawyer call who said that he's disenchanted because justice and the law are not one and the same. So if you're an idealist, don't go into the legal profession. And we just had a doctor who called who said that he doesn't have the authority to be the doctor he's trained to be. They're trying to give it to people with almost no training whatsoever to save money. Los Angeles, 8:30 on the dial. Jack, next up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Great to talk to you and great to talk to our radio host who actually has a few degrees there, just a different level of conversation.
Thank you.
Listeners as well. But I'm 28. I recently graduated from a top 25 law school, full scholarship. Advice that I would give to anybody who's considering going into law school is not necessarily to dissuade them from going to law school, but look at the percentages of those who decide to take that law degree and go into business and use it so that you can protect yourself from all the damn avaricious other flipping attorneys that are going to come after you for
You mean to protect you from the John Edwards in the legal profession?
You need that. Oh, good Lord. Don't get me started on MedMal, Mike. That's it's a disgrace.
I don't understand how this issue of his having made his fortune through fraudulent claims has never come up from the media. I can't understand that.
You're going to be hard-pressed to find any law school where idealism is anything other than pure socialism. You're either in it for the money, you're going for the very top law firms. I think the quality of life stinks per hour. You're not making that much if for your first 2-3 years, quite frankly. And if you want to be an idealist and you're conservative, don't go to law school, my friend, unless you use that law degree to go in another area, which is exactly what I'm
saying. Well, wait, I want to pause right here because I think getting a law degree is actually a very good thing for mental training. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Definitely, definitely. I was.
I have a very wealthy friend who said to me that just getting a law degree, not necessarily passing the bar, is an excellent way to keep the mind sharp, exercise it. And if you're going to go into another field, having a law degree is always a good background for that reason alone, that you've trained your mind to be focused and logical.
No, it's a great way to train the mind, quite frankly. I went to a large public school here in Los Angeles, starts with a UC, and I was bored.
Well, hail. I went to UC Berkeley, so I'm a proud graduate of one of the greatest university systems in the world, and it certainly was when I went there many years ago. I can't say it has collapsed completely. It's still probably pretty good.
Yeah, no, I went there for undergrad, and quite frankly, it wasn't that difficult. I was really taken aback in my undergraduate training, but the legal training is something completely different. I would definitely recommend for any youngsters to go, but with the qualification that if you really do want to practice law, understand exactly what it is that you're doing. That's why you have so many people who ultimately decide they're going to become professors. Anybody with a whit of sense for quality of life, the hours stink, Mike. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I would never.
What is it? 80 hours a week is pretty standard, or more for a young law graduate.
Yeah, well, hey, if you don't come in on Saturday, don't bother coming in on Sunday, quite frankly. And at the end of the day, though,
you know. But wait, let me pause there. You know, Jack, I learned from business people many years ago, everyone in business works 6 days a week today. Anyone who really runs their own business is working 24/7 one way or the other. They're rarely off. If you're running your own business, you're never off. So I don't think that's the issue. I think it's the type of hours that you're putting in where you're running a clock all the time. That can get to you, right?
No, for those that are beginning in large law firms, which are roughly, it's the top third of a class, and I would say the top 25 or so law schools for your large markets, California, New York, you're doing strictly research to a great extent. All that research is going to go to benefit somebody else. They're going to take credit for it, and you're pretty much out of
luck. Right. Well, it's like an assistant professor or a graduate student with a PhD who does the research for the professor who takes all the laurels. There's nothing new in that. It also sharpens your mind in the first few years, but it's a question of, are people prepared for that kind of system? I don't know. So we've talked a little bit about law and medicine, and yet nobody, you want to go back to politics? Let's go back to Edwards. How does a man get away with this crime? It's right out of Balzac. behind every great fortune, at least in France at the time, there was a great crime. Edward's fortune is built upon the great crime of lying to Ozark juries without teeth or without much between the ears. And yet not one idiot in the media will challenge him.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Politicians are so full of crap. Here in San Francisco, for example, they banned plastic bags in supermarkets. They said it's bad for the environment because the plastic bags don't deteriorate or disintegrate. They sit in the landfill for thousands of years. They're very concerned about the environment in San Francisco, as I say. So now you have to have a paper bag when you leave a grocery store. And if you're walking out in the rain, it doesn't matter to the city of transsexuals who run the city. The paper bag, of course, disintegrates in the rain and your groceries get wet. The plastic was much better and much more convenient. But let's take it on the face of it. So plastic is not biodegradable, right? Then how come they distribute condoms in San Francisco like M&Ms? Isn't that made of a plastic? You're telling me that the condoms that are so popular with the city transsexuals don't sit in landfills for 20,000 years? You see the hypocrisy and stupidity? Or they tell us that the salmon population is dying out, that the salmon here, we're supposed to worry about, that the salmon are not breeding. We don't read that the people are not breeding, only that the salmon are not breeding. So now they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. Record low number of salmon reaching Central Valley could mean severe fishing restrictions. And they try to analyze why the spawning, the number of salmon that are spawning, has decreased. Nobody will say that perhaps the toxic garbage that is dumped offshore in San Francisco is poisoning the oceans.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage.